A symphony concert is being held this Sunday at Central Michigan University. It's being described as an evening of healing and reflection about the support people can give those affected by sexual assault. Now, if you're thinking of Michigan State's struggles with handling sexual assault, you're not alone. The composer of the two pieces to be performed is also thinking about those girls and women who survived that abuse. Here's a sample of the music. Evan Ware is the composer, and he joins us now. Welcome to Stateside.
Thank you very much, Lester.
So before we start talking about the underlying motivation for your works, how do you describe your music to someone who's never heard it?
Well, that's a million-dollar question. It's very difficult, even to an expert, to give a very kind of accurate description of what it is that you do, because in contemporary classical music, everyone has kind of gone on in their own directions, and I would say over the past 50 years. And so it tends to be extremely personal. The best thing I can probably describe to you is what my influences are, and that says something about what you might hear out of my music. So my influences would be like the symphonies of Jean Sibelius, the Finnish composer, also the symphonies of Gustav Mahler, the Austrian composer, but I'm also heavily influenced by jazz, Miles Davis, Gil Evans, and I would say Bill Evans too, in terms of harmonic language and kind of textural density. So, you know, I like music that's maybe a little bit rich and that kind of moves between more familiar tonal areas, so tonality like, you know, E flat major or F major or something like that, and less familiar areas that you might hear in arrangements by people like Nelson Riddle or by composers like Claude Debussy or Yannis Xenakis, or, you know, like really kind of dense materials. And I use these to create the drama in the music.
I saw in a release that your music was described as angular, bristling energy, and that you frequently use it to confront alienation and trauma. How accurate is that?
I would say that's very accurate because trauma has been a central part of my life. I'm a survivor of childhood sexual abuse that happened between the ages of 8 and 10. And I think, you know, before I was able to articulate that problem in my own life, which only happened when I was about 27, you know, my spirit, my soul was searching for ways to deal with the pain that I was going through. And so my music often uses a lot of repetition. So, you know, listeners who might be familiar with minimalism, like Steve Reich or Philip Glass, would hear certain similarities in my own music. And that repetition is often thought of as a kind of way of dealing with trauma, sort of repeating the same thing over and over again, working things out in gradual, slow processes over long periods of time. And that's kind of how I addressed my own issues and my own hurt, you know, try and peel it back like an onion until I came to a greater understanding of it.
The first symphony, which I listened to online, is titled The Quietest of Whispers, and as you said, it was inspired by your own experiences. You were also quoted as saying you started to realize that this symphony could be a means to help other men, quote, engage with their pasts in a way other than through rage, sadly the only deep emotion afforded men in our culture, end quote. How does The Quietest of Whispers address that?
I think one of the key events in my life was realizing that it wasn't in trying to be strong that I was going to be liberated from the pain of my past, but in fact, it was in being vulnerable and in allowing in the feelings of pain, hurt, betrayal, fear, all of those things, and integrating them into the story of my life. Because most survivors go through something called dissociation, where they kind of split apart the elements of their lives so that they don't take it all in at once as this, you know, terrifying story of abuse. And the work, at least the therapeutic work that I've done, has been to kind of reconnect all of the elements of my life into a whole narrative. I think, you know, men particularly are taught that we gain power by having power over other people, not by coming to know ourselves and coming to accept ourselves. And I wanted to provide a different discourse. I wanted to have a different conversation about this and tell people out there that, you know, it's okay to not be strong sometimes. And in fact, not being strong, and I mean, I use that in the typical sense, because I think it takes a lot of strength to be able to be vulnerable, but not being strong is in fact the keys to liberation in most cases.
You, like so many of us, were horrified by what happened at Michigan State, and for that matter, what happens at a lot of schools. You were quoted as saying the number of victims was as staggering as the depth of their betrayal, not only by the perpetrator himself, but by the university administration, faculty, and in some cases even family members. What does this symphony evoke that will help people be more mindful and supportive of victims of sexual abuse?
Well, primarily this symphony is aimed at the survivors themselves, and I think of the symphony as kind of a passage through the night that sort of settles in after the clamor of justice has moved on to other topics. So I think it's great that the perpetrator was convicted and that he will not see the light of day forever. And I'm satisfied with that. But I think that the difficult part, and certainly in my own life, the difficult part was to deal with the quiet that comes afterwards and the feelings of isolation and loneliness and, you know, being really separated from people around you because you've been through this experience that in many ways isn't very describable to people who haven't gone through it. And so this symphony is an attempt to build community through music, which is, I think, one of the great powers that music has. So what I wanted to do is to invite people to be vulnerable, to create a safe space in which they can be vulnerable and know that they're surrounded by a community that cares for them and that supports them and that will protect them through this passage so that they can find their own liberation. So the first vocal movement of the symphony, because there's a singer in this one, the first symphony doesn't have a singer. The first poem, great poem by Jane Hirschfield, it's called Da Capo, the poem. And the last line, you know, there's this kind of recipe that goes through the middle of the poem, which was actually extremely hard to set in music, but a very fun challenge. And you're sort of thinking, like, where is this going? And then at the end of the recipe, the poet says, "Eat. You may do this. Begin again the story of your life." So I felt that this symphony could be an invitation to do that, to engage with the pain, integrate it into your lives, and know that you're doing so in a safe communal environment with people who support you.
So Symphony Number 2 complements The Quietest of Whispers. They're linked.
Yes, exactly. And in fact, on more ways than just in terms of concept, the first vocal movement, which I call Begin Again, begins on the exact final chord of the first symphony. So I took the same chord at the end of the first symphony and put it at the beginning of the first vocal movement of the second. And the second symphony, it exists in the same musical world as the first symphony for about the first four movements. And then in the fifth movement, there's this train horn. It's called Crossing. And what I did is I used some railroad crossing bells in the percussion section. Then I ripped a video from YouTube with the trains that go through Mount Pleasant, and I put it through an overtone analyzer so I could figure out what pitches were being represented. And then I orchestrated those pitches to sound exactly like the train as much as possible. And then as it passes your perspective, there's the Doppler shift and it drops a minor third. And what that does is that opens onto a new musical space that you haven't heard at all in the symphony or even in the previous symphony. And that's this kind of opening into a new world of possibilities.
Who will be performing the pieces?
The pieces will be performed by the group Apex Contemporary Performance, and particularly the Apex Sinfonietta, which is a group dedicated to new music, particularly music that is not heard very often. It's going to be conducted by Kevin Fitzgerald, who is the man who conducted the first performance of The Quietest of Whispers back in 2014. And so it's a real pleasure to be able to work with him again, because he is such a, he's a very profound musician, the kind of person who could spend time with my scores and then come in with an analysis of what I was doing, and then I have to be like, "Wow, dude, get out of my head! You're like, it's pretty impressive." And he's just a fantastic musician, and he's gotten together a group of fantastic musicians that I think are going to do some really, really great work with this music.
You mentioned there was vocals in Symphony Number 2. Who's the vocalist?
The vocalist is Amy Petrangeli, an old friend of mine from my days at the University of Michigan, but she's also an alumna of Central Michigan University, so this is a bit of a homecoming for her. She's an absolutely fabulous soprano, and I remember the moment that Kevin called me up about a year ago to say, "Hey, you know, Amy's interested in working with us. What do you think?" And I thought to myself, I mean, there's no other answer but yes here. She is such a consummate musician and an incredible vocalist, and it's just been a huge pleasure to write for her voice.
The concert featuring Evan Ware's The Quietest of Whispers and Symphony No. 2 will be performed at the Staples Family Concert Hall at Central Michigan University on Sunday. It's a real pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Lester. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, too.
Support for arts and cultural coverage comes in part from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs.